Hi, my name is Frankie. Thank you for listening to Two My Mom. I never listen.
That's right. Every podcast, my man Frankie tells everyone not to listen to me. But I'm going to tell you right now, you are going to want to listen to Vintage C. Vivian Stringer, head coach at Rutgers, been a coach for 50 years. She takes us down memory lane a little bit. Stories about Chaney, her first head coaching job. Stories about growing up and the evolution of the 55 defense. If you know Vivian Stringer, you know that the 55 full court defense is synonymous with her teams, and she's got a good team this year. And so please take a good listen. Coach Vivian Stringer, one of my all-time favorites. I always say she doesn't bring a cup of coffee to practice. She brings the entire percolator and plugs it in on press row. I've seen it myself, but she's worth a cup of coffee and a listen. Check it out. Coach Stringer, no one has coached as a head coach for 50 years. I can't imagine the stories, the learning, the sharing, all the things that you've done. When you think about your 50 years, how would you encapsulate that in, you know, what you've been able to see and witness and experience in the game?
You know what? It was kind of interesting because I was going to send a text, which I didn't, to Tara Vandeveer. And it was basically going to say something like, for the love of the game, which we, and we, only we know. And, because I'm just wondering what, like, who coaches, who does something like this for this time, this amount of time, you know what I mean? Like, who does something like this for this amount of time? And I think that the coaches that do this, you know, just are so grateful to be involved, really and truly. But it's so much more. I can't even explain it, other than this is what I love to do, and I'm grateful and appreciative that I have an opportunity to do this. This is amazing, you know, like, yeah. And so when Tara, you know, because she and I had a big game when they had whatever the first sellout, women's sellout, 24 hours. It was between Rutgers and it was between Iowa and Ohio State. Mm-hmm. That was powerful. I mean, I just remember coming on the floor and being so afraid as I looked into the stands. Like, I remember putting my clothes on, and there were police cars downstairs. And I thought, what's going on? I forgot that we even had, you know, like, it escaped me that we were having a game, and trying to figure out where all these people were going. And I'm not kidding you. And when I walked out there on the floor, and Tara walked out, it was like I felt like I was floating, you know, floating just on the clouds, you know. And I looked in into the stands, and it looked like a sea of bumblebees, because everything was yellow and black, right? And so, wait a minute, you started the game, and I was thinking, and something happened. I don't know what happened. Something happened to the lights or something for a split second. And I thought, my God, I hope that it just stops and that we have to call this a draw and go. Yeah. Cause I didn't want to, you know, it's like not ever wanting to wake up from this dream, you know, because the greatest dream was to have been able to play in front of all these people. And what happened is George Raveling, who was our men's coach, you know, was saying that, you know, the Hawkeyes are strong enough to embrace both the women as well as the men. So when he said that, you know, everybody, because it was a nationally televised game, and I guess he was playing Bobby Knight. That's who he was playing. He was playing a game against Bobby Knight, and he talked about our game, and he said, the women will be playing, Ohio State, and when I, like I said, when I walked out there, I floated, and I thought, oh God, I just wish that somebody would unplug it and it would all go away and we would still be the winners, you know. Like I didn't want the game to ever end, and certainly if I wanted it to end, I would want it to end in the first 5 minutes, because that's how long it took before the game changed, you know. And man, I'll tell you what, I have never had such a feeling as that, and Tara and I, you know, will forever live in what I would consider one of the greatest moments of my life, you know, in my basketball life. And so we enjoy that. We shared that together, and that was so special. But I think that if I had written, and I don't know how I would have phrased it, but I think that that she and I would have only been the only two people that would know what it means to devote your entire life to this game of basketball. You know what I mean? You don't spend this kind of time in something. This is so important, and it's important for us. I'll have to do that. I'm going to reach out to Tara and tell her that that she and I enjoy a special moment. I don't know how many years. You know how many years she's been coaching?
She's over 40.
We're close to the same boat in that, you know what I mean? Like
when you coach these kind of times. When you use the word love, because honestly, that's what I think about when I see you or I spend time with you. You have this incredible gift that every former player of yours that I know has a deep gratitude and a shared love for you, for what you've done for them, for how you've helped them become young women, and some, you know, matured into being mothers and grandmothers at this point. When you think about love and the word trust, some people share trust or think about trust from a respect standpoint, right? You can get trust from respect, but you can also get trust from love. When you think about love for the game and what you're saying about how much you and Tara loved the game, and when you started, there was no money in it, there was no accolades, there was no celebrity. But when you think about your current and your former players, mostly your former players, what does it mean for you to see that group of women when they come together, or when they reach out to you, or when you reach out to them?
Yeah, you know what, Deb, I think that I have no words really to explain or express that. I feel like I'm the luckiest person in the world, because most of us, you know, will do something that we like or possibly love, but to have that reciprocated, back is something real different, you know, because more often than not, people leave this earth and never know how much, you know, they're loved and appreciated. And I've been really fortunate because the players, you know, have shown that. Like, how many professions are there that you get immediate gratification? Yeah, like, think about that. You know, immediate gratification. And the fortunate part about it is if you can keep them for the 4 years, ultimately, they will be able to graduate and feel, you know, their cup is filled, because they now can go forward into the world. It's kind of interesting. I got a letter from one of my more difficult players, and and she wrote it, and I said to the team, I said, I'm going to share something with you. And so this player said, you know, Coach, I've scored dozen points, you know, and had dozen rebounds and dozen so. She said, and she said, you know, you'd be proud of me because the way I've practiced and the sincerity and the seriousness that I take everything, you know. And I read it, and so the girls will say, when they heard the name of the player, they went, "What? Oh my God! What? She said that? Yeah, you know." And I thought, wow. And then she made a statement. She says, "I once was blind, but now I see." Wow. You know, and I thought that was the most powerful thing that she could have ever done. Because, you know, and she said, you know, thanks for believing in me and thanks for hanging in. And I was thinking, I was so disgusted with her, you know, but yet as I see that now, I realize it, man, you know what I mean? Some kids take a little longer than others. And we are in the greatest profession in the world because you get, and in fact, it made me want to reach out to Dr. Grant, who was my athletic director at Iowa. And I wanted to reach out to her to let her know that how much I appreciated her. And Dr. Grant is a woman that, an administrator that was so empathetic. And I remember one time when I had lost a game and I was really upset about it. And so she came on the floor and she said, "Hey, Vivian, why don't you just go home and just relax a little bit and don't even worry about coming to practice." And I thought, yeah, okay. You don't know how I'm built. You just don't even know how this is. I can't take this, you know? And yet I knew that she was very sincere. And I'm like, who, as an athletic director, would come and tell the person to just go home and relax and don't worry about it? And yet she did. But I can tell you that I wanted to do better. I always wanted to do better. And she was like that. And so what I thought is, she doesn't get a chance to hear from people like me. She probably hasn't gotten a chance to hear from other young people that have taken her graduate classes or whatever. And she needs to hear, she needs to know how much we love her. And yet I think that a lot of people share in that thought, but too many of us don't express enough to those that aren't in a position to get that. You know, like, there's a lot of athletic directors that you really love and care about, you know, but do they really get that? I mean, I get it. I get the feeling. I know I feel like I'm loved, and I get that. I get that when a player calls me, you know, like it's as simple as that. The other day, SS Carson called me, and she was saying, "Coach, what's going on? I know, you know, because you guys were doing so well. What happened?" And I don't understand it. She just happened to call me just after a game, and I was saying, I said, "E, you just don't know. You just don't know." I can't even tell you. I said, "Phew, if I could tell you, if I could start from A to Z, you just don't know. Believe me." And so she said, "You know what?" She said, "No, I'd be anxious and excited to talk to the kids, you know, because I know that you have 11 freshmen." And she said, "You know, but Coach, they're young. And you know, they don't know any better." I said, "E, this is crazy. This, the things that they don't know. Oh my God, you just don't know." And so she said, "Well, you know what? You know, I'm in LA right now." I said, "But you guys weren't like that. Like, just don't know. I mean, I can't even get real mad. It's really bad, but I can't get real mad. I mean, like, what the heck?" But, you know, I think that when a player calls and I know that they're, you know, they're concerned because they want to know, "Are you okay? Are you okay?" And I'm thinking, am I okay? Okay. You know, but who calls this? We're fortunate as coaches. We're really fortunate because if you have young ladies that really care about you or young men that really care about you, you know, it makes a difference, you know, or Felicia Hall, like, "Hey, I just want to know, you okay?" You know, like, you know, and I'm thinking, she's asking me, am I okay? She didn't ask me about my team. Am I okay? And yes.
Coach, does it feel like a warm blanket that you get validation from your formers that care, that look in on you, that are following the program, that are interested in, you know, like mm-hmm. Essence, interested in how young the team is. And she wants mm-hmm. to speak to them because she knows mm-hmm. she was once there and look what she's doing now. I mean, she's an incredible ambassador for our game and had a really good career, a really good season. Do you feel like you need to prove anything anymore? Or do you feel like you're just doing what you started 50 years ago as a head coach, trying to teach the game, teach young women how to respond, react, and create and be proactive? And is there some sort of validation there?
No, I've been told enough times that, I don't need to prove anything. I think that proving would have taken place some time ago. But it's just the drive within myself, you know, that if I'm going to coach, I'm going to coach with everything that I have, you know, that's what I know that I would do. And I don't know how to do it any other way. And, it's kind of interesting because, one of my assistants, Tim Eatman, was saying, Coach, you know, you want the kids to know everything. And so even if there's a little bit that they can't do or know, you know, because they don't know, they don't have experience, you just spend the time and you just want them to do it. And there's no such thing as we're going to give a little piece of that. You don't do it that way. But I'm so happy and proud of the fact that the young people have taken an understanding of what we're talking about, the game, and they've been able to make a life for themselves, you know, in our game. I don't know how much more I can give. I remember 2 years ago. I don't know. Do you know this book? I bet if I give it to you, you'll know it because it's an elementary book that speaks to the little boy that his best friend was a tree and so I remember last year, the year before, I'm telling you what, I was so driven to make this team what I thought that we could be, that it's the first time I'd ever done this, and I read to them a chapter. That the book is all like a real book, thin book, but basically, you know, the boy was always trying to be lay down close to the tree, and the tree would give him comfort. He would give him, you know, give him a great place to rest his head. And then eventually, you know, the boy decided that he's going to, you know, and the tree said to the boy, you know, come and cut my limbs and do this and do that, you know, and you'll have some shade and you can have this and you, but ultimately the boy ended up, the tree ended up giving the boy everything that he possibly can. And then he was looking for more, but he didn't have any more. And so he ended up making the tree. He made a canoe, and he wanted to, you know, he said, come, you know, ride in my tree hollow. And, you know, you can ride, you know, and I'll take you down the river and I'll give you this and I'll give you that. And I was saying that because I knew that at that particular point, I've given everything that I possibly can. There was nothing else. I could not give them anything more. And I haven't really felt like that before, but I just knew that I did. I did. And it's strange because I think that when you read that story, it's by somebody, Silverstein.
Is it
Giving Tree?
Yes, ma'am. The Giving Tree by Shel Silverstein. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Deb, you got to get that. I mean,
I think I have it.
Thank you. Yes. But it's like when you've given everything and there was nothing else to give. You know, you basically, you gave him your life. You know, you've given him life, because that's how I felt. You know, last year before I left the game for a while, but I just knew that there was nothing else that I could give. I couldn't do any more.
And you have had not just a remarkable career from a number standpoint, or any way you want to measure your time in the game in your 50 years, is just remarkable to even say that. And it's amazing how many people on the men's side ask me about you, because you've been coaching for so long and they're intrigued with your passion and your ability to teach that long and to care about all the young women that have come underneath your tree and your branches. You've also faced some incredible life-changing adversity. You've had lots of different things without listing them, but because of all the experiences that you've had, whether it was your own health, the you know, losing members of your family, including your husband, raising your daughter with special needs, all the things that encompass who you are, what would you say to some young coach that's out there that's worried about the money, or worried about their contract status, or worried about, you know, things that maybe they don't have any control over? How would you frame that so that you could provide advice to others?
Well, let me say this. You have to do this because you just love it. I mean, it can't be about money. It never can be about money. I couldn't spend 2 seconds worth of time on that. And I know that, you know, we all got to make a living, and, you know, and unfortunately our value is more determined by the money that, that our university or athletic directors give, you know, and that tells you your value. But like, for example, at Cheney, I didn't get paid one dime. Never got paid for anything for 11 years. You know, like, no, I wasn't looking for it. I was just grateful that they allowed me to coach and teach these young ladies. So, no, it wasn't about that at all. It wasn't that. It was, I would say to anybody, follow your passion. If it's your passion, then you know what? The greatest gift that you could ever give yourself is to do something that you want to do, because we're all in life going to do something. And most people are doing something that they don't even like. They don't even like, you know, and they make a lot of money. But how about me? I feel blessed. I think about that. I feel best. I get paid. And see, you know, and I have the reward of the players, you know, and if you can have the luxury of having, you know, people in your life that has been more meaningful to you, I don't know what else you could ever want. You know, I think for women, for example, in particular, because as you and I have talked, you know, so many women are unfortunately not in a position where they may have this love and passion, you know, for coaching, but you know, if for example they're you know, they're married or whatever, and too often their dreams or desires are not met because no one considers that to be what they need to have. And for me, I'm really grateful to my husband, because he was probably one of my biggest fans. You know, he loved it. He bragged about, you know, my wife can do this and my wife can do that. You know, you would think that he bragged so much about me. And Jesus, I have been the luckiest person in the world. And so many women don't have that support, you know. But you know, more often, a lot of young women don't pursue their dreams because they don't get the support, you know, or, you know, like even as a kid, when I was growing up, I used to go down the basketball court and play, you know, with the boys in the neighborhood. But when I went down there, I put on shorts. I put on a skirt, and I didn't show anybody that I had shorts underneath my skirt. And that was because I didn't feel that, you know, it wasn't presented to me that young women should be able to play basketball. How could you be playing basketball? You know what I mean? And so I was, I wouldn't say ashamed of playing basketball, but I was ashamed because I wasn't doing things that were intellectual, if you will. So I, and then when as people would drive back and forth going to, you know, back, going into Edenborn where I lived, you know, I would be on the court and I would hope that they didn't see me. How is that? You know, and now women can play basketball and everybody loves and cheers and that, but that's the feeling that I had, you know. Or for example, my mom used to say this, and it really used to bother me. She said, you know, oh, she's our little tomboy. I don't want to be a tomboy. You know, I didn't want to be a tomboy.
So you were a cheerleader, weren't you?
Yeah, I was a cheerleader, but that's a little different.
Coach, I want to ask you one more thing. Mm-hmm. One more thing, and then we'll let you go, because I'm hoping you'll come back with us some other time. I want to ask you, everybody knows about the 55 defense, okay? Mm-hmm. And we know those young kids are figuring it out. But is there anything else in your life that is named 55? And I want to know where you came up with the origin of calling your defense 55. Like, do you have a sandwich named 55, or you got a sign in your house with 55 on it? I mean, 55 is like, that's synonymous with you.
Well, you know what, to tell you the truth, the 55, you know what the speed limit was, right?
Yeah.
And so if you go over the speed limit, because that kicks you up, which is why we came into 55 defense, you know, and honestly, I got my, this version from, Coach, Tom Davis. And I'm thinking, I went to Stanford. I don't know if I visited or whatever, but I'm thinking these boys are not nearly as quick as the women that I coach. And so if we can put them in that mode of kicking it up. Now, the difference with Tom is that Tom only trapped once. And when he trapped once, it was over. And I trapped all over. And in fact, it's kind of interesting because when Bruce Pearl was at Tennessee with Pat Summit, Pat knew that we were going to play the 55 defense. So anyway, Bruce came over and, you know, introduced himself, which of course, you know, I loved him. He's a sweetheart. I said, you know what? I said, Bruce, you really think I see you here, and I know that Pat's, you know, picking your brain, trying to figure out what you can do to break it. I said, but you know what? I got something for you. And so I started laughing. And what happened is that he took Candace Parker, and Candace Parker was on the right side, which is the side that the person is normally going to receive the outlet pass.
Right.
But the difference is I put Essence Carson on the right side. Essence could stay with Candace, you know, with the run, the attempt to get that pass in. And she's close to the same size. And so Bruce started laughing. And he said, yeah, okay. All right. I got you. And it was funny because, that 55, and Bruce and I spent time when I was at Iowa, and he was the assistant, you know,
Bruce Pearl was an assistant for Dr. Tom Davis at Iowa when you were there.
That's exactly right. What happened was that they didn't have a formula for trapping it all over. And I came upon a formula, you know, to get everybody back in place, because you could say guards on guards, post on post. you know, when you recover and get back into this position. But we needed to be able to go into a zone or a man-to-man defense. And because it's not understood, that it's automatically going to be a zone. So with that said, then the way I figured it out, we could do either one. And the 55 was only because the speed limit was 50. And so it was just, you know, like you can get in the car and you can speed it out of control. So that's the mindset that we were working with. That's the
Coach,
truth.
Appreciate so much your time. Thank you so much for being with us. Always love talking to you, and I hope you'll have another chance to come back with us this year and talk about your team.
I will. Thank you. And I'll be more than happy. So consider that done.